Hi, Nadine.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us on WGXC today.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to start because I learned about you initially in the New York Times article that just recently came out on Wednesday. That's called Using His Software Skills with Freedom, but Not a Big Paying Out in Mind. And I was very curious to learn from you firsthand about the program you're developing currently, CryptoCat. Could you discuss that a little bit?
Sure. CryptoCat is a web application that works inside any web browser, and it establishes an instant messaging program that you can easily use to chat with friends or business partners or whatever. And it's meant to be easy to use, and it works in a similar way to Facebook Chat or Google Chat. But the difference between it and these other technologies is that it employs a transparent layer of encryption, which means that contrary to how Facebook Chat or Google Chat operate, even I, the CryptoCat server, can't see what you're discussing, and this protects your discussions from being leaked for commercial purposes or given to governmental authorities.
When did you start developing this?
It's almost a year old now. I'd say it's going to be a year old in about 2 to 3 weeks.
Can I ask like a real like the most basic 101 question, but can you describe what encryption means?
Encryption simply converts data that is easily readable to encoded data that can only be read with the use of an encryption key, which basically encodes the data so that it's only possible to read it, so that only the intended party can read it.
So what's I actually just was listening to Julia Ogwin, who recently just did the hackathon, which I believe you partook in, over in the city, and she there was a video chat of her because she's one of the technical reporters for the Wall Street Journal, and she prefaced your program CryptoCat as being one of the top 20 of the programs that were showed or sort of highlighted in that hackathon. And I was curious, the point of that hackathon was to bring a bunch of like-minded people who were engaged with software code writing to collaborate and essentially develop new ideas, correct? Did you find some type of helping hand in that hackathon?
The hackathon was really instrumental in developing CryptoCat in the past month. I met with some really awesome and very talented people who were really interested in the project, who also they work on other projects themselves, but they were really interested in helping out CryptoCat. And so we had a couple of very good cryptographers, for example, helping me solve some really difficult cryptography problems. And we also had an Android developer who helped me make an Android app, and also the head of our particular team was Jake Applebaum from the Tor project, and his experience was really very useful. And we actually ended up winning an award at
Great.
that Wall Street
Congratulations.
Journal events. Thank you. It was I think the Data Control Award or something like that. And yeah, I mean, that's why I was in New York the past week, and it was a really fun event. And I think CryptoCat grew a lot because of it and received a lot of attention, and that's wonderful. You see, the state of the project right now is that we're using strong encryption, and I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm putting a lot of effort into it, and that it works fine. But when you're developing a piece of software that is meant to make private communication easy for people who might be using it, for example, in the Middle East and where places where it's dangerous for them to be using private communication, then you just want to spend many years, not just 1 year, making absolutely certain that everything works as you expect it to before deploying it in those very dangerous areas.
Yeah, that's incredibly salient. I'm curious, you said that you developed an Android app, and in the article it also says that you had kind of figured out to work with the motion detectors so that if you shook it, you could actually encrypt the content of the conversation. Could you explain that a bit?
The thing with CryptoCat is that under most platforms, it needs to, before you can start chatting, you need to generate some random data, and that random data is instrumental in making sure that the cryptography operates safely, because cryptography is strengthened by randomness. And so for example, on the web browser implementations of CryptoCat, before starting your chat, you just type on your keyboard for a while, and you type randomly, and it uses that to produce random data. But on your phone, since most smartphones these days are equipped with motion detectors, we figured that we can just ask the user to dance around a little bit, and according to his dancing. I honestly thought this was my favorite feature of the entire hackathon. I was very excited
fantastic.
About it. And you know, the nicest thing about it is that it is scientifically true that in order for the encryption to be strong, your dancing has to be as unpredictable as possible.
Wow. I would be very good at that. That's amazing. How many people at this point sort of use CryptoCat and rely on it? I mean, I know that it takes, you kind of emphasize that it might need some time before dire situations or people in dire situations would use them, but who uses it at this point and to what capacity?
Yeah, dire situations require, I think, I might want to ask it to be reviewed by some PhDs out there before I'm absolutely certain, but at the same time, I don't want to undermine its current usefulness. I think it's still very useful as a encrypted chatting application, that it does a good job at protecting your data. It's actually growing very fast. At the beginning of this month, the beginning of April, we were having 300 chats per day.
Wow.
And assuming each chat is two users, then that's 600 users a day. But now, after recent media attention, it's been gathering around 400 chats per day. So that's a 33% increase this month, which means about 800 people every day are using it.
And you mentioned Julian or Jacob Applebaum was at this conference that was headed by the Wall Street Journal. And I also remember reading that you were maybe kidding up with Tor to somehow develop your CryptoCat.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. Well, Jake Applebaum's function at the Wall Street Journal event is that he led the team that we were on. I mean, when you join, I was with a bunch of other students and professionals at the hackathon, and we had the choice to join either Jake Applebaum and his own track, and there was also Dan Kaminsky and other people who were leading tracks, and depending on what your project was, you could join with one of those seasoned professionals who would help you just work on your project all weekend, which was great. And so that was his function, is that he basically led our project thanks to his experience. And he works with the Tor project, something which I really value a lot, and I believe that, I mean, I think hopefully one day we will try to implement maybe CryptoCat into the Tor browser or something like that.
Fantastic.
It would be a really nice cooperation, because CryptoCat offers encrypted communications, but it doesn't anonymize you. It doesn't hide your identity the way Tor does. So that's one way in which Tor can be really useful.
Can you explain to us what Tor is?
Tor is a piece of software that you install on your computer, and then when you access the internet, you can access the internet anonymously, so that the websites that you visit don't know your identity, but also so that your internet service provider doesn't know what you're doing on the internet. So both your identity and your privacy are protected using the software. So while CryptoCat protects the privacy of your chats, it doesn't protect your identity. So people, for example, I mean, theoretically, the internet service provider or whoever is monitoring you will still know that you accessed CryptoCat. They won't know what you said over it, but they still know that you accessed it. And so Tor is a piece of software that, it doesn't encrypt your chats, but it actually makes it so that people don't know that you visited CryptoCat in the first place.
Right. So, for instance, if I was to load onto my email via Tor, they would just see Tor. They wouldn't see that I entered into Gmail or that I, yes. watched Democracy Now! Or something like that.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Can I ask you, are a political science student in currently at Montreal, going through your finals?
I'm doing a double major in political science and philosophy, and I'm currently going through my finals. That's right.
Okay. And I'm curious, what sort of, is there any specific initial event that got you specific hacking or in security or in developing CryptoCat in general? Or I'm trying to figure out what the history of you is. That
there wasn't like a Batman turning point where.
Oh, really?
it's just a natural evolution of something that I'm really interested in. I assume it's like this for a lot of people. They just grow up and they have an interest, and as they get older, they get better at it and they do cool things. I imagine it's the same thing for your profession as a journalist. And I was interested with computers ever since I was very small, and that interest kept growing, and I found it very beautiful, and I'm getting better, and I'm doing nice things that I really love, and that's nice. That's all.
And do you find that the programming at your university in Montreal is providing you with a strong educational background, or are you doing a lot of that through community outreach and all of the various forums that you partake in?
Well, I don't study computer science at university. I actually learn it myself. And if you look into the hacker community, you will find that I am by far the majority of people they're exactly like me. For example, a lot of people who work on Tor never received formal education in computer science, but yet they're recognized internationally and give conference talks and stuff like that about computers. It just so happens that this form of craft has a very tightly knit community, especially computer security, which teaches itself and communicates. And also, I'm sure everyone who's been through university agrees with me. When you graduate through university, it's not because you went to the class, but it's because you listened to the teacher and you read your books. And so it's the same thing. I mean, there's a bunch of people in the security community who I found actually really seem to have a vested interest in helping me learn, which is amazing because I feel really indebted to this kind of community. And also, the books are there. They're not particularly expensive. And if you can read them, then you're done. And then when you actually do the work, there's a bunch of very skeptical people on the internet who will look through your work and make sure it's done right. Mm-hmm. And that's all I can ask for. It's a wonderful community, and I'm very happy to be part of it.
It's interesting to me that the article that we read in the New York Times is the headline of the article is "Using His Software Skills with Freedom, Not a Big Payout in Mind," and it reminded me of a lot of the recent coverage of hacker culture around coverage of Anonymous and how much that coverage has been focused on this sort of like cultural bafflement that we have around someone who might not be interested in celebrity or spectacle, and in this case, and then in the New York Times article, the article was sort of framed around the fact that there weren't financial motivations here. It seems like sort of an interesting spin that a lot of the coverage has taken, and I would love to hear you talk about that part of the hacker community.
Well, things like Tor have been very useful to a lot of not just political dissidents around the world, but to just people who want privacy. Also, it was used a lot during the Arab Spring. There are graphs that actually correlate the usage of Tor to events happening in Egypt and in Syria during the Arab Spring. It's just that this kind of technology can be really useful to people. And it doesn't mean that by working on CryptoCat or those people working on Tor, by working on the software, that they're, surviving day by day with crumbs of bread and, nothing but water to drink. You do get research funding, and you can manage to make a living out of it. Thankfully, I think that's actually very valuable. To be honest with you, I don't only program just for the freedom aspect. I program because I really like the aesthetic. I think it looks beautiful. I enjoy personally. It's a selfish enjoyment for me to be able to create something that I find beautiful and that I find useful. It makes me have, that's a big part of it. But also, that by itself is definitely not as satisfying as creating something that hopefully in the future will be very useful to other people who I only immigrated to Canada 2 years ago. I come from the Middle East. I've actually been through a couple of situations where there was a war between Lebanon and Israel, and I feel I can understand what war is like. And I also am very grievous concerning the Lebanese government, which I feel is extremely corrupt and hasn't been improving at all. So for me to just focus on the aesthetic part of programming is not enough. I also try to make sure that my work does a difference, because I understand that I'm only going to live once. And, if I'm going to do something with my life, it better be something useful.
So the CryptoCat, do you know if it is used primarily within the U.S. at this point, or has it actually reached do people that you have contacted with or who
have
no idea, right?
No idea. I, yeah. I, I think it would be very unethical of me if I tried to.
No, of course, of course. I'm just trying to understand if there's been specific.
There are actually safeguards against me being able to keep such statistics. I mean, the programming code for CryptoCat is all open source, and right. people check it to see if there are any sort of statistic keeping code inside. And also, they can host it on their own servers if they feel like they don't need to trust my server, which is perfectly fine. It's actually made easy so that people can host it on their own servers without any trouble. I can tell where it's being used based on the press, actually, just, you know, right. which countries cover it more. But that's a terrible, terrible indicator, actually. I don't know. I mean, because, you know, U.S. press is much stronger and more well-read than many other countries' press. So that's not really a very good indicator. But really, I really have no statistics. The single statistic that I keep is how many chats are on the server, and that is actually the absolute single statistic that I keep. And the only reason that I keep it is that once the server deletes, you know, archived encrypted ciphertext, it just increases a counter by one, and that's very basic.
Okay. The last question I just wanted to bring up was, because we both went to the lecture that was held at the Whitney, that was with Jake Applebaum and also the former technical director of NSA, William Binley. And in the question and answer period, there was a woman that stood up, and I believe she was part of Occupy, and she asked, what's the best thing activists within the United States could do to secure their communications, especially over smartphones and cellular phone technologies? And is there any way of being confident in that sphere? And Jacob Applebaum, he sort of prefaced it by saying that, you know that you're carrying a tracking device that also happens to be a telephone. And he goes on to talk about how the New York police has cell phone inception things and tactical exploitation and he kind of says that it's important that you have tech security, that you encrypt your voice over ID, you use the red phone, consider for a second meeting with people in person as opposed to bringing your phone as a way to kind of have a data trail behind, leave a data trail behind you that isn't actually accurate. Beyond CryptoCat, and is there anything that you could, or how would you answer that question?
Well, I think what Jake Applebaum said in that respect is actually quite accurate. It should always be assumed that what you're doing to secure yourself is just a small step above. Every single step that you take is just a small step going from the fact that your phone is probably completely compromised. That's just a security culture assumption. What you can do is that, yes, there are a lot of very nice open software tools like Redphone and TextSecure, Gibberbot, for example, a chatting application, Orbot, which provides Tor on the Android phone. There's also, I believe, Tor coming on the iPhone soon, although I'm not particularly certain. A CryptoCat is already available for a mobile website. So if you browse to the CryptoCat website from your phone, you can use it. But also we're working on local native Android, iOS, and BlackBerry apps to be released hopefully this summer. Oh, actually, I'm pretty sure they're going to be released this summer. They're almost done. We're just working on making the interface nicer. But the back end is done. You answered your own question quite well. I don't have much to add to that. Jake is considered, I personally consider him a very believable authority to answer such questions.
Hmm. Well, Nadeem, thank you so much for coming on to WGXC. I know a lot of people have the questions that we've been asking you, I know, are on a lot of people's minds. And so it's great that you were in New York and that you won the award during the Wall Street Journal hackathon, and I wish you all the luck with CryptoCat and a lot of, I'm sure, very ambitious projects to come, and your finals.
Oh. Yes, I really haven't been able to study for my finals at all, and I can't bring myself to study for them right now. So I'm going to need all the luck I can possibly muster. Thank you very much for having me on your show. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.